From the Media Factory in the South End of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington. Streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, we have an interview with Vermont writer, artist, and anthropologist Dana Walrath, who likes to cross borders and disciplines with her work. After years of using stories to teach medical students at University of Vermont's College of Medicine, she turned to writing her own. Her award-winning verse novel, Like Water on Stone, was completed during the year she spent as a Fulbright scholar in Armenia. Her graphic memoir series, Alzheimer's, has brought her throughout North America and Eurasia to speak about the role of comics in healing. Her recent essays have appeared in Slate and Foreign Policy. My interview with Dana concerned a recent project, her contribution to the graphic nonfiction book, Menopause, A Comic Treatment. Like so many other issues surrounding women's reproductive health, menopause has been treated as a cultural taboo. On the rare occasions that menopausal and perimenopausal women are depicted in popular culture, they are stereotypically cast as the butt of demeaning jokes that encourage us to laugh at their deteriorating bodies and emotional volatility. The result is that women facing menopause often feel isolated and ashamed. In a spirit of community and support, this collection of comics presents a different view of menopause that enables those experiencing it to be seen and to feel empowered. Dana's contribution to the book is called Amenopause. When we spoke, I asked her to begin by talking about the book and how she became involved in the project. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Well, the book is a project that was begun by the Penn State Press's editor, Kendra Boileau, who's championed the whole graphic medicine line. So and Alzheimer's, my graphic memoir about my mother and dementia, is the fifth in that series.
Oh, okay.
And then the very first book in the series, The Graphic Medicine Manifesto, was co-authored by M.K. Zurich, and who's the editor of this collection. So it sort of came out of a conversation between M.K. and Kendra. And then from there, M.K. just reached out to the whole comics community and put together this wonderful, diverse volume.
It is. It's a wonderful, I didn't get to see the whole volume yet, but I enjoyed the little video that you shared, which actually I can put that on my podcast site, a link to the video. That would be fun.
Oh, please do. Yeah.
And your piece is wonderful. So you titled your own part of the book, Amenopause or Amenopause, depending on how you want to pronounce it. How did you come up with that title? I liked it.
Well, you know, it's one of those titles that can have many, many meanings.
Yes.
You know, so I wanted, as it says in the comic, get men out of menopause. So amen, get it out of there. Because I think it really is kind of ironic that all of the female body things, and I know it goes back to the Latin and that, you know, with month and moon and so forth, but it just, when you speak English and you've got menarche and menopause and all these things and they're women's bodies, it kind of is a subtle message about the colonization of our bodies. So I thought, A, menopause, get the men out. But then I also thought, amen, let's embrace it. Let's just go with it. Because I think part of the reason why we want to take menopause back is because it's been so medicalized and it's become this thing that signifies sort of our demise as beings that we never really intended necessarily to be. It's just how we've been biologically defined. One of the really fun comics in the volume, the one by Ajwan, she talks about, I never identified myself as a reproductive machine. So, you know, why am I gonna have this be the be-all, end-all in my life?
Right.
And I remember very early on in anthropology graduate school, reading Margaret Locke's book comparing menopause in Japan compared to North America. And that just kind of opened my eyes about how what we experience in our bodies is shaped by culture every step of the way.
Right. I loved this. You have a quote. So I was going to mention that your contribution to this book is many things. It's your personal, it's a part of your personal story. It's a story of the environment, and it's a story of women and women's power or lack thereof. And you write, many symptoms, in quotes, of menopause experienced by North American women are hormonal responses to the low social status of aging women and not to a biological expiration date. I loved that. And then you also talk about the women in Japan and how they have typically very different symptoms than we do, and they have a very different level in the society as well. So that was fascinating.
Yeah, Japanese women are at the height of their social power as their bodies are ending that childbearing phase. And so someone could say, oh, well, it's that they eat lots of soy over there, or, you know, make up a biological explanation. But I really think that so often our bodies are these powerful barometers of what we're experiencing socially.
Now, I think the environment plays maybe the largest role in your piece, other than the story of menopause as its own subject, and that was wonderful too. You write, and I have to mention, I loved all of your accompanying graphics drawings. You write, Mother Earth had her own hot flashes. She sweated at night. She stormed violently. She rearranged her shape, and it goes on from there. And so your drawings aren't just about a woman's body, or the woman's body. It's also about the body of Mother Earth. I loved that was part of what you did.
Thank you. No, I really think that part of why our bodies, as women, we experience all these things is because we've gotten disconnected from Mother Earth and from that power and from just the normalcy of natural phenomenon and different ways that we can think about them. But right now, we're living in an environmental crisis where the earth is assaulted constantly by pollutants, toxins, drilling, plastics, I mean, on and on and on. And the earth is responding in big ways. We're having insane storms. We're having rising sea levels. We've got these massive swirls of garbage in the oceans and so forth. And I keep on thinking, oh, and now on top of that, because I wrote this before the pandemic, now we have, you know, a virus that's spanning the earth. And I feel like Mother Earth, Mother Nature keeps on trying to get our attention to say, rethink how you're living, get back more in balance. And so that was what I was thinking about there. And that if you listen to the earth, you can find balance. Mm-hmm. And so it's a way to be strong and to be powerful. And we've also sort of just got disconnected from that through technology, through just using our brains instead of our whole bodies and being parts of nature.
Right. And another thing that I thought came through really well in your piece is a larger message in the book as a whole, which is that menopause itself has always been treated as a sort of joke, and women and what we go through during menopause are, you know, if you mention or if it's depicted in the media, it's usually with a laugh track, you know. And so, you know, that really came through. It's in the description of the whole book, but it came through in yours as well. And you write a little bit about some of the other species and what it's like for them, you know, plants and whales and bonobos. And, you know, that was fun. But also, you know, made me think. It really did.
Yeah. I remember sitting in the classroom in anthropology graduate school and just hearing all these evolutionary theories about, well, why do women or why do females stay alive after they're done with childbearing? And I thought to myself, how bizarre, you know, that we're even saying our only purpose in life is just to procreate. And so that to me spoke of sort of a colonizing lens, and that as much as it's normal to be born, it's normal to age, it's normal to die. These are all part of the spectrum. And it's normal to go through physiological changes, and it's normal to have, you know, sometimes real physical discomfort. But you're so right that so often physical discomfort is turned into a laugh track, a way to kind of other women, in a way to kind of, you know, just strip them of dignity and of power. Because what a good way to shut people up is to laugh at them.
Right. And it's also, I think, you know, a real circle, because would those symptoms be as bad if we weren't already ashamed?
Absolutely. That's absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We don't know what that would be like if we were living very different sorts of lives.
Right. And I love that this is changing. You know, I feel like my generation, you know, having periods, it was always a big secret, a big hush-hush, a big shame. You know, we couldn't talk about it. It wasn't something that everybody went through together. It was something that you went through very much alone. So I love, that's another reason I love this book. Let's see, Dana, let's talk a little bit about your background. You've done an amazing number of things, both here and abroad. Mm-hmm. And I think in reading about your work, I've wondered how you've been able to be so varied in the work you do, and how, what allowed that kind of multiplicity in so you are educated in anthropology, in writing, you were associated with the University of Vermont's College of Medicine and did some teaching there. Can you want to just talk a little bit about your background?
Yeah, it's if you had asked me this question, say 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I might have said, oh my gosh, why am I doing all these different things? But now all those things really knit together. And I think that it is that I'm fascinated with how things are connected. I really like the edges of things. So it's not accidental that I've focused on the beginning of life and at the end of life, kind of in my anthropological work. It's not accidental that I think about states and empires and how humans make all these boundaries, because what I like are the edges and how we can undo those boundaries. So I'm just an inveterate connector. And I've thought about this a lot, especially from the time I spent living in Armenia, 2012-2013. I was there working, I was a Fulbright scholar working on a project called the Narrative Anthropology of Aging in Armenia. But meanwhile, while I was there, I also finished up a novel about the Armenian genocide, loosely based on my grandmother's story. And when I was there, I was right on the Silk Road, and it gave me a chance to sort of think about, what am I carrying? What am I really carrying of my cultural identity? And I think that probably people that have lived on a passage like that, where people have been traversing and exchanging cultural information probably for hundreds of thousands of years, it kind of opens you up, maybe on a genetic level, who knows, but certainly on a cultural level, to think about, how are we connected and how are we different? Mm-hmm. And what are we making up in our minds, and what might be a reality of a primate brain that thinks in categories? And I tend to go back to the notion that we're primed to connect. We're primed to see what we have in common, and that cultures impose this other layer on us. And so and I don't know if that comes from living on the Silk Road or not, or ancestors who lived on the Silk Road or not, but that's how I got to thinking about it. And so if you're thinking about connections, well, then when you're studying art, you're fascinated by biological shapes under the microscope. When you're writing about anything, you're pulling in all sorts of other pieces. So, so it is, I'm just someone who likes to weave stuff together and connect, and then also take things apart.
Now, do you think that during that period of time when you were a Fulbright scholar and you were living on the Silk Road, do you feel like that intersects where this what I called multiplicity started to come into a sort of more practical cohesion for you?
Oh, good question. I think it happened earlier. I think I kind of knew it intuitively growing up, with two cultures in my mm-hmm. life, with the Armenian culture and the American culture, and trying to balance them. And then when I traveled and lived in other countries, I was always thinking about, you know, how we're the same. So as a 16-year-old, I lived in Yemen. As a 19-year-old, I lived in Egypt. Later on, I lived in France. And, you know, all the time I was just seeing, how are we the same? How are we the same? Then I studied anthropology and I had a vocabulary to describe what was in common. So it was sort of, I had those ideas as a little kid, maybe, you know, sitting with my over at some relative's house, and they'd be speaking away in Armenian, which I did not speak myself, but then I'd hear the word television pop in. So I sort of always knew there are these worlds that are crossing. So I would say that it just got stronger and stronger over time. The piece that solidified in Armenia was the fact that many Armenians seem to do a lot of things. Like I would mm-hmm. go to a monastery and it would write about one of the monks who was a musician and a poet and a mathematician. And I thought to myself, oh, I wonder if that's because of all of the travel back and forth here. So that was when I put it together with the Silk Road. But before that, I was putting it together with everything. And then anthropology gave me a way to be more articulate about it.
Okay, well, that's great. And so one of the many things that you do, in addition to writing and having studied so many different things, is art. And the work that you include in this piece is a graphic piece that you did the illustrations for. I wondered what media you used in your drawings.
This was pencil. This one was strictly all different softnesses and hardnesses of pencil. They come very hard, so you can make a light, sharp line, or very deep and soft and dark. So that piece was all pencil.
And then were some of them penciled on paper to be seen underneath? Do you know what I mean? Like some of them look like they're scratched on without any lead.
That's a good observation.
Well, I loved them. I thought they were great. There's a beautiful one. Let's see if I can find it here. The page says, our bodies are exquisitely tuned to our environment. Social and political forces have cellular consequences. I mentioned that before. There's like some scratching on that page that doesn't look only like pencil.
So here's a great artist trick. If you take a very sharp pencil and draw with that sharp pencil, it makes a groove in the paper. And then if you draw over it, so a hard pencil, like an H for hard, and B stands for soft for whatever reason, and then draw over that with an 8B or a 9B or a 6B or whatever, and you'll get that effect of seeing those white lines. So in fact, those lines on that page are continuous, drawn with that very, very hard pencil. And then it works as a resist when you draw over it with the soft pencil.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's see. Well, I always like to ask my guests what books they have read lately that they might recommend to listeners. Just a few titles, if you've got some that you might, or a couple or one, whatever, that you might recommend.
Yeah, that's such a fun question to entertain. And usually I'm reading several things at once. Right now, most connected to what we were just talking about, I'm reading a beautiful book called Parwana, which is the Farsi word for butterfly. And it's by Durkani Ayubi. And it is a combination history and cookbook from Afghanistan. So she is telling the deep imperialist cultural history and everything leading up into the present day conflict, while telling the direct story of her family as displaced people who had to leave Afghanistan and live in Pakistan, and then eventually made it to Australia, where they have a fabulous restaurant. So I'm really enjoying reading that right now. And again, the Silk Road shows up in there. It's beautifully told, and I can't wait to cook too. So I'm reading that. I have to say, I really enjoyed reading all of the other parts of Menopause, A Comic Treatment, because as a contributor, I had no idea what everybody else had in there. So when I finally got my copy, it was the first time I read it all through. Also related to this book, I just happened to have read a couple of weeks ago Elena Ferrante's book, Days of Abandonment, which I had never read. But I thought, oh my goodness, this is a good one to read right now. And one of my sons just loves her work and keeps on saying, you got to read her, you got to read. And I this was really a good one to think about how limited social responses end up being for women because of how we've internalized the gender norms and how she's pushing back and fighting against that in her days of abandonment when her husband leaves her because of something that was ongoing with a much younger person and probably underage even when it started, and how she just copes with it in the, not Elena Ferrante, but the character.
The character. Yeah.
So it was a good one to read. So,
I haven't read that one. I've read others of hers, but I haven't read that one yet. Yeah. So, okay. Those are great. Thank you for that. Now, do you have something that you're working on next? Do you?
Oh, I'm always working on a bunch of things at once.
And I saw you just won a Vermont Arts Council grant, right?
Yes, I did. I did. That is for the libretto for an Alzheimer's opera. So Vermont composer Eric Nielsen approached me about turning that story into a single singer, a soprano opera. My mother adored opera.
Oh,
absolutely.
Wow.
Just, revered it and would listen to the Metropolitan Opera broadcast every Saturday afternoon. And I thought, what a way to honor her, but what a way also to expand this story, because I am right now working on a sequel to Alzheimer's called Between Alice and the Eagle. And that one is going to pick up where the last one left off, which was fall of 2013, and then follow the last step. 4 years of her life, and bring up all sorts of social justice questions that have become so relevant in the pandemic. You know, what are we doing in terms of care? Who's doing the care work? How disproportionately Black and Brown people are exposed to risk because they're doing this care work across the globe. I mean, it's not just in the U.S. Same thing in Japan. Same thing in Europe. People are coming from the global south to take care of aging people in the global north. So it's going to have a lot of anthropological ideas in it too, but that's going to be a real classic graphic memoir that follows those themes. And then after George Floyd's murder, I actually put Alzheimer's, that work, a little bit to the side to get back to a project I had begun in 2016 as an art installation, but now am turning it into a book manuscript. And that one is about 9 of the genocides of the past 500 years. And just giving a framework to think about how this is not the human baseline, but it's culturally produced, and we can unproduce it. We can stop hurting each other. And so it works with the concept of dehumanization. I had the original art installation was drawn into the surface of an old zoology text. And now I'm taking the text parts of the zoology section, and I'm making blackout poems. Have you ever done those?
No, but I know Go ahead. You can say.
You take a page of text and then you just redact words the way governments redact texts when they don't want everybody to know. And when I'm redacting words from the zoology text, they're telling yet another layer of the story about the genocides and I start with what happened to the first peoples of the Americas and then enslavement, indigenous Australians, Armenian genocide, the Holocaust, Cambodia, Bosnia, Rwanda, and the Rohingya. And in each case, I mean, the poems that are coming out are horrifying in so many ways because you see how easy it is to find the ugliness within the scientific text. So say I'm writing about, I'm taking a page about centipedes and it's in the book about the Holocaust and it brings out lines like animal considered the lowest member, hiding by day, running swiftly at night, prey captured, killed quickly by poison that comes from a duct. And so, like if you hold in your mind what humans have done to each other, and then you look for it on a page, you can find it, and it has this kind of objectifying scientific authority. And I have to be very careful right now because I believe, you know, in science. I know we've got a pandemic going on, but also we've had some really ugly phases of science, such as human experimentation on black bodies for centuries. And so in the section on enslavement, you know, I'm just pulling out that kind of stuff. And so that's what I'm in the thick of working on right now.
That must be hard to keep your consciousness there for long periods of time while you work.
I'm glad I have a garden.
Yeah.
To go back to Mother Earth, I feel very lucky to live in nature as I do here in Vermont. So I get to replenish. And I think because I feel that so many times people are saying, these horrors are inevitable, and I don't think they are. I think we humans have created them, and again, we can uncreate them.
Right.
We have to really look at the systemic injustices that are built into the social forms that are dominating the earth, and then we can create better forms. So definitely nature is a touchstone. I have zinnias and sunflowers on my desk to cheer it's summer.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
we're running down on the clock, but I do want to ask my last question. What advice might you have for writers who want to try their hand at a graphic novel or nonfiction book? Maybe not drawing, but writing the text, or also drawing if they have that talent as well. Or what suggestions do you have for people who feel they have no talent but want to draw anyway?
I really think that drawing, making stuff connects us to very deep parts of ourselves. And so often people say, oh, I can't draw. And so they're scared of that. And I would encourage everybody to just draw and do it without censoring. Draw with your eyes closed. Or as Linda Barry recommends, before she sits down to write, she actually begins by drawing a spiral. She starts like right in the middle and then just keeps on going round and round and round and round and gets herself into this nice, rich, subconscious, relaxed state of mind. And then from there goes into writing. And Linda Barry, I heard her teach a workshop at the Comics and Medicine Conference of 2016, where she talked about the spirals. And I've had spirals in my artwork since Yeah. And I think it's because they're an ancient ancestral form. I mean, that's why it's there on the stone. And it's this ancient ancestral form that we can relate to now.
You have a lot of them in your pieces.
Originate
yeah.
in the fact that our DNA is spiraled or is that something universal? Who knows? But it's a powerful technique to draw and just to use your hands in a different way. And lots of times when I'm talking to writers who are afraid of drawing, I just, you know, come up with all sorts of things to just get them to tap into it, because really writers are drawing with words all the time. They're creating spaces. They're making things, but using just words. And sometimes when you do it in your hand too, it can free up the words in a new way. So I would also, I always point students to Miriam Engelberg's book, Cancer Made Me a Shallower Person, because that's a brilliant, insightful book in which the drawings are pretty much stick figures. So drawing is, you don't have to be a crafts person. You just put marks on paper. And so the more we can sort of make it be very direct, the way children can be when they've got a pen in their hand, it's just gets you right inside parts of your brain.
Wonderful answer. I want to mention again, the name of the book is Menopause, A Comic Treatment. My guest, Vermont author and contributor to this book has been Dana Walrath. The book is edited by M. K. Zerwich. And the book is published by Pennsylvania State University Press, Penn State Press. Dana, thank you very much for speaking with me about Menopause, A Comic Treatment, and Amenopause, your chapter. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shayla. It was great to be with you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Dana Walrath, local author, artist, anthropologist, and contributor to the new graphic nonfiction book, Menopause, A Comic Treatment, published by Penn State University Press. You can learn more about her work at danawalrath.com. Dana Walrath generously offered us a Write the Book prompt for today's show, which is related to the advice she offered for writers at the end of our conversation. In keeping with her advice to proceed your writing session by spending some time drawing, even if you're not an artist. So just make marks on paper, or just simply draw the evocative and inspiring spiral, which Dana talked about during our conversation. It's a great way to tap into your subconscious, but also establishes a ritual that announces to your creative self that it is time to work. I have to say, I got all excited as I wrote this prompt out and put down the word inspiring right before the word spiral, because I figured, oh, wow, they're related, and I can look that up, and they will be from the same Latin root. But guess what? They are not. I looked them up, and there is no etymological link. The association is coincidental. Spiral comes from Greek, and it's a word that means, you know, coil, sort of like a snake is coiled. Whereas inspire comes from the Latin for to breathe. However, that doesn't mean we can't link the words for ourselves as we work. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and please tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. I'm excited to report that next week on Write the Book, we have a return guest, Tana French, the Irish mystery writer who actually started her walk on this earth in Burlington, Vermont, and whose dad lives here, will be my guest. She has a new book coming out. The Searcher will be out next week. So we're looking forward to that. I'm running a little short on time today, so I'm going to skip the bookworm's calendar. However, I am still going to, like I do every week now, give you a little lecture about the pandemic. And it's gotten so much more serious this week. Our seat of government has been infected. So I am going to just repeat, this is so important. Please be careful. Please take care of yourself and your loved ones. Don't spend time in public, close to people. Wear a mask. Take precautions. And if you can, try to support the writers whose books are coming out in this strange time period where we aren't allowed to all be standing in a room together, raising a glass and toasting a new creative project. I hope that you're able to find the books that are out there and read them and support other authors' work. I hope, too, that you're able to write and that you are doing okay, basically. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know that archived episodes of Write the Book are available at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. If you have a guest to suggest or comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. If you like the show, please rate it, like it on Facebook, and tell all of your friends. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Have a great week.